welcome everybody to Bible class this morning. We are in Acts chapter 17, continuing on in our study, looking at Paul's second journey, missionary journey. And last time we began in chapter 17, looking at Paul when he goes to Thessalonica and the Jews had stirred up problems there, and he from there moved on to Berea. And one of the things that we emphasized in talking about Berea was the fact that the Bereans, it says here, were of more noble character than the Thessalonians, for they searched the scriptures daily to see if the things that Paul said were true. So we were encouraging us and using that as a way to encourage people that we study with, the whole idea of searching the scriptures. Don't take anybody's word for what they're teaching you, but encourage even people you study with to search the scriptures to make sure that what they are being told is the truth. So from Berea, we see Paul moving on to Athens. So we pick up in our study verse 16 of chapter 17, and on your study guide, this is at the bottom of the page, the inside page, under number 4. The gospel confronts the educated. All right? So if I could get somebody to read beginning in verse 16 on down to verse 21.
Right.
You got that, Holloway? Okay.
While Paul was waiting for them in Athens, it was greatly distressed to see that the city was full of idols. So he reasoned in the synagogue with the Jews and God-fearing Greek, as well as in the marketplace day by day with those who happened to be there. A group of Epicureans and Stoic philosophers began to dispute with him. Some of them asked, "What is this babbler trying to say?" Others remarked, "He seems to be advocating foreign gods." They said this because Paul was preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. Then they took him and brought him to a meeting of the
Areopagus,
where they said to him, "May we know what this new teaching is that you are presenting? You are bringing some strange ideas to our ears, and we want to know what they mean." All the Athenians and the foreigners who lived there spent their time doing nothing but talking about listening to the latest ideas.
Okay, so here we are. Paul from Berea goes on to Athens, and let's look at some of the events that are taking place here. And first of all, we see Paul that it says he's greatly distressed. Okay, so why the distress for Paul as he goes to Athens? What's going on there that causes him such great distress? And why would it cause him this distress? Okay, yeah, this is a city that is just full of idols. They've got altars to all kinds of different gods and so forth. Athens was a city that was known for its culture and for its religion. And so you have a lot of these philosophers and people that would just kind of sit around and talk about religion and gods and whatever the latest ideas and things that were coming into the town and so forth. So they had a lot to talk about, okay? But a lot of what was going on was theology and it was philosophy, that somebody heard this, somebody heard that, and they're bringing this. And one of the biggest things is that They had this idea that basically said the world is full of all kinds of gods, and what's one of the things that you don't want to do if you want to honor the gods? What's one of the main things you don't want to do? Well, I'm just talking about the people of, you know, of the Gentile, you know, pagan world. What's the one thing that they don't want to do? Okay, and how would you anger the gods? Yeah, if you leave one of them out, okay, that's like, we don't want to do that, all right? We don't want to leave any gods out. And so they had idols for every god that somebody came along and said, oh, have you heard about this god? Have you heard about that god? Oh, let's build an altar, you know, and so forth. But just to cover themselves, and we'll read this in the next section here, just to cover themselves, they had one altar that was basically had a title on it that said what? To the unknown God, okay? Now, what was the purpose of that? Do what?
In case
they missed one. This would kind of cover that God that maybe we hadn't heard about yet, or maybe, you know, we missed somewhere and, you know, and so forth. We want to make sure that all the gods are appeased, okay? So notice that we're talking about all the gods. These are people who believed in multitudes of gods. Okay, there were gods for everything. And there were plenty of philosophers that would talk about, they'd sit around in the Areopagus, and they would just discuss and philosophize and all this kind of stuff about the gods. So when Paul goes into Athens and he sees all these idols, and of course his focus is to do what? He wants to preach Jesus, right? The only true God. So, of course, being there in that city is going to distress him, okay? And so when so he goes, and the first place that he goes is where? He goes to the synagogue, and that's where he goes to teach and so forth. Look at what it says here. Verse 17, he reasoned in the synagogue with the Jews and the God-fearing Greeks, so he goes, which was, as we saw earlier, was his custom, right? When he went to a new city, he would go to the synagogue and try to reason with the Jews and teach them. So he's got Jews and God-fearing Greeks that he's teaching and so forth. Then it says he also went to the marketplace day by day with those who happened to be there. Okay, so go to the synagogue and teach, primarily Jews and God-fearing Greeks. In other words, those who Greeks who believed in Jehovah God, okay? And now also just anybody and everybody who would be in the marketplace to hear him talk about Jesus, okay? And that's where we run into these Epicurean and Stoic philosophers. They begin to dispute with him. Okay, what's this guy's teaching? What is all this? He's babbling. Okay, it's kind of what they're accusing. What's he babbling about? Well, he's introducing what, as far as they're concerned, a new God. Okay, well, wait a minute here. There's another God that we haven't heard about. Tell us more. Let us know about this new God that we have never heard about before. And notice what it says here. This is in verse 18, the last part of verse 18. They said this, he's advocating foreign gods because he was preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. Now, he's teaching specifically about Jesus and the resurrection. How do you suppose that teaching would come across to these people who believed in all these various kinds of gods?
It's kind of strange, like you said, it's a strange idea.
Okay, but what makes it so strange? Okay, but what specifically would really be strange to them in this teaching about Jesus that he's that he's giving here. Yeah, but it's about the resurrection, okay? It's the resurrection, and so that would be to them is like, well, wait a minute. You mean God died and then he rose again? You see, no other God that they would have been affiliated with or know about in that particular time, that wasn't taught about any other God. Okay? So that whole concept of a God who died and then rose again from the dead would certainly be something that would go, whoa, wait a minute here. Okay? I mean, you tell us about this new God, but now you're talking about his dying and being resurrected. How does that happen? How does a God do that? That's a totally, completely new concept religiously for these folks, okay? Then they take him to the Areopagus, where they said to him, may we know what this new teaching is that you are presenting. You're bringing some strange ideas to our ears, and we want to know what they mean. Okay? This whole idea was certainly a very, very strange concept when it comes to gods. And as far as they're concerned, this Jesus who Paul was teaching about was just another god amongst all the other gods that existed. They just hadn't heard about him until now. But you add this extra part of the equation in terms of a god who's risen from the dead, that kind of changes everything for them. So, and when you look at the next thing he says here, that verse 21, all the Athenians and foreigners who lived there spent their time doing nothing but talking and listening to the latest ideas. That's basically what they did. And so here's a new idea. Okay, it has to do with religion, and it has to do with this idea of something that's never been heard of before in terms of a God like this being raised from the dead. Okay? So Paul, then, in the next section, let me see. Let me get somebody to read, if you would, verse 22 down to verse 28. And then I'll get somebody else to read the rest of it. Who'd like to read? Tom?
Paul then stood up in the meeting of the Areopagus and said, people of Athens, I see that in every way you are very religious. For as I walked around and looked carefully at your objects of worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, to an unknown God. So you are ignorant of the very thing you worship. And this is what I'm going to proclaim to you. The God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth and does not live in temples built by human hands. He is not served by human hands as if he needed anything. Rather, he himself gives everyone life and breath and everything else. From one man he made all the nations that they should inhabit the whole earth, and he marked out their appointed times in his history and the boundaries of their lands. God did this so that they would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him, though he is not far from any one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being. As some of your own poets have said, we are his offspring.
Okay. Who wants to read the rest of the chapter for us? All right, Lynette.
Joined him and believed, among whom also were Diana.
Okay. So Paul gives his what is referred to by scholars and so forth as his Sermon on Mars Hill, okay, to this group of philosophers there in Athens. And let's notice and focus for a little bit on some of the specific characteristics that Paul talks about as he delivers this message, this sermon, to these folks. What are some of the characteristics that he points out about God?
Live in temples.
Okay. He doesn't live in temples. Okay.
He doesn't need things given to him.
Yeah, he doesn't need stuff from us. Okay. Now, how would those two things kind of go against what they practice and believe? Yeah.
So that he wouldn't get angry.
Exactly. This their gods, for the most part, the gods were needed to regularly be appeased, and that's why these various sacrifices were brought and offered and so forth. And they worshipped in they had various temples and so forth that they worshipped him in and so forth. What else? What other characteristics does he mention here? Do what now? Okay, yeah, that he's the creator of the world. Okay. What else does he mention here? Specifically about the creation, what does he mention here? Okay, he made man. Okay, made all the nations from one man, right? Okay, which would also include who?
Them,
exactly. Okay, all right, so what else does he talk about here? Okay, judgment, all right, there's going to be a judgment, but there's something else very significant that he says here to them.
God wants them to
see. Yes, look at verse 27. God did this so that men would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us. Okay, as far as most of the religions at that time, as I understand, and I'm not by any means an expert on ancient religions, but as far as I know, the philosophies and the beliefs of all these various gods really didn't have any kind of a concept where the god would be seeking people out to have a relationship with him. Okay, the gods back then that the people believed in were more, as we mentioned a moment ago, they had a kind of a relationship where you keep me appeased and I won't destroy you, kind of a thing, you see? And so they were always looking to, we don't want to, one of the concepts that most people had with most of the gods was, we do not want to get the gods angry at us. Okay, so this whole idea of God seeking people out to have a relationship with them, that in itself would be a very foreign concept to them. All right, what kind of a God is this? Okay, Dale?
Another important point he made, the context of which he says to repent, is that the real God is not like the other gods.
Right. Right.
And so he's not only just another god you need to add your worship to, but you need to worship him instead of all of these.
Right. You've got to get rid of all the rest of them.
Which was going to be a hard thing for them to swallow.
Exactly. Okay. Now look at verse 28. Another really significant thing that he says to them. For in him we live and move and have our being. Okay? So why is that particular statement, would that be so significant for them to hear?
God is the reason for their existence.
Okay?
The reason why they exist and why they continue to exist.
Okay.
Not as he says earlier that he needs anything. We owe him something because of our response to his care and love for us.
All right. Okay. So again, part of this idea of a God who actually is involved in the lives of people in a meaningful way that says, well, yeah, he directs your steps. He wants to, you know, influence what you do and so forth. Is very, very different from, again, the concepts that they had of where, you know, it was like, yeah, the gods are there somewhere, and again, we've already said the idea was appease the gods so they don't become angry, but beyond that, you just kind of leave them alone. Okay? You just, you know, it's like the gods are doing whatever they're doing, and hopefully they won't notice us and won't get mad at us and punish us for something we don't even know we're doing. And that was kind of the belief system that they operated on. So to have this, you know, Paul's here telling us, well, this God that I'm telling you about, it's in him that we live, that we move, and he says, and we have our very being, our very existence is from him. Okay? So this God is involved in your everyday life. All
right? Right before that, he said he's not far from each of us.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, to them, that idea is so foreign because it's like, we don't want the gods near us, because if they're near us, chances are we're going to make them mad. So the further away they stay from us, the better we are. But no, this God is right here. Okay, Brian?
And he was also demonstrating that their gods had limitations.
Okay.
Because they had a God for everything. So if it didn't rain or didn't provide.
Right. Okay, here's another question for you. Those two statements, verse 27 and 28, the first part, God did this so that men would seek him and perhaps reach after him and find him, though he's not far from each one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being. What do we need to take away from that ourselves, from what Paul is saying here to them? Sorry?
This God is with us every day.
Okay.
All day, every day.
All right.
And not just sometimes.
Okay. He's with us every day.
And he supplies everything we need.
Okay. He gives us what we need.
He's a part of our daily walk.
Okay.
And so no matter what we're going through, the time, especially in times like now, we're never alone. And he's right there just waiting for us to call on him.
Okay.
So we just have to have the faith and strength that he'll carry us through. So this statement here, that is, especially with today's time and with everything you look around, some people are saying where he's at. They're not looking in the right place.
Okay. Yeah. One question a lot of people are asking today, where is God? With all the stuff that's going on, you know, in the world, all the chaos and problems, where is God? He's left us now. He's not left us at all. Charlotte?
To withstand all of that, we have to realize without him, we are nothing.
Yeah.
We wouldn't be able to move. We wouldn't be able to speak. We wouldn't be able to do anything without him. So that statement says a lot for that also.
horrible things happening because he's angry, and so what can we do to appease him?
Yeah.
And this speaks to us in the same way that he was speaking to the Athenians, that that's not the right concept of God.
Yeah.
That God's there to help you through your suffering, not to eliminate all of them, but to provide you with what you need. So the things that are going to naturally happen in the world, that you've got the support you need during this.
Okay. All right. Wes?
The one thing you just said a minute ago about a lot of people wonder where is God. A lot of people, they don't even consider God until something drastic happens, like a catastrophe or earthquake, fire, you know. But they never consider the fact, where is the devil at?
Yeah.
It's, you know, like, what is he doing? You know, like, why isn't he behind all of this wrong thing? But they want to blame God when an airplane fall out of the sky. Why he kill all these people? Oh,
right.
Like in the case of 9/11, why all the people had to die? They want to blame it on God, but they never looked at the fact that the devil had his hand in that.
Right.
It wasn't God.
Yeah.
You know, they don't consider that.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of people today, we hear folks talking about, you know, and using as justification for the belief that there really is no God, because if there really was a God who is all-loving and so forth, then he would stop all this kind of stuff. And the problem there is they just simply don't understand the concept of, first of all, of God's sovereignty, as we've talked about many times before, and also the fact that yes, God, he does have the power, and he will at some point stop all of this, but not until the time is right, okay? And in the meantime, the world goes on, and we have to do what we're supposed to be doing, which is God's work, okay, to try to share the message with as many people as we can, all right, until that time comes, all right? But people's ideas today about God, there are a lot of different religions in the world today, just like there were back then. But many of the world religions that we have today are very clearly outlined and defined in terms of their belief system and so forth. So it's a little bit different today, religion-wise, than it was back then, just from the standpoint of that if you identify, you know, as one particular religion, then you have those parameters, whereas with these folks, they're just kind of like, you know, we want, as we said earlier, make sure we got all the gods covered kind of thing, and they don't really know what to believe about, you know, all of them, so let's just kind of put all of them together, and, you know, we want to make sure all the bases are covered kind of thing. One of the major differences today that we see is that we have people that are taking their religion, whatever it is, and this is happening, as I understand, again, I'm not an expert on even, you know, all religions in the world today, but you have a lot of different branches, if you will, of various religions. And like in Christianity, for instance, there's like 3,500 different groups that call themselves Christians, churches, okay? And then, you know, with the Muslim faith, there's a lot of different, you know, some different ideas and groups. And then with, you know, the Buddhists and, you know, so they all have their branches of, you know, where somebody says, well, hey, you know, this is what we're going to do. And so there's a general belief, you know, by a huge part of the population of the world, there is a general belief in God. Okay, whether he's called Jehovah or Allah or, you know, what, you know, there's a general belief in God. But within that, under that umbrella, there's a lot of diversity in terms of how people apply their faith and their belief in God. Does that make sense? Okay. And so that's kind of somewhat different than what this situation is, where there's just this general, we got all these different gods that we believe, whereas let's just take Christianity for a moment and say, yeah, you know, most Okay, I'll just say most because I don't know what all of them believe. But most Christians believe in Jehovah God and they believe in Jesus. Okay? But within that, under that umbrella of Christianity, there's a whole lot of different things that people believe about God and about Jesus and about how we're supposed to live and so on and so forth. So, again, there's this, we all believe in Him, in the same God, but the application of what we do and how we live our life is very diverse. Okay, in how we go about day to day and the application of our belief system to God. So that's just, like I say, within Christianity. All right, Beverly?
Russ, I remember when we were younger and you go to school, you have to fill out your registration cards and they would always ask your religion.
Okay. Yeah, what kind of Christian are you?
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
What kind? Yeah. Yeah. So you're right. Back, all the way back then, there were a lot.
Oh, yeah. And or people would say, what denomination are you? Mm-hmm. You know, so, and that, you know, most people, when you just tell them, well, I'm just a Christian, they want to know, what kind of Christian are you? Are you a Baptist Christian, a Methodist Christian, a Catholic Christian? Are you, you know, what are you Protestant or Catholic? Are you, you know, there's all these different varieties. I'm just a Christian. Just a Christian. And so then you have to further, well, where do you go to church? Mm-hmm. You say, what church are you affiliated with? Because they want to narrow it down, you see, you know, kind of where, you know, okay, what's your background? You know, and so forth. So I just tell people, hey, I'm just a Christian. I worship and I attend the Church of Christ. I'm in that fellowship of Churches of Christ.
They don't want simple because yeah. The hospital will ask you, you know, your religion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Christian.
Yeah.
You know, nowadays everybody wants their hoopla to hide being a Christian. They don't want simple. I'm a Christian.
Yeah.
I follow God. Mm-hmm. You know.
Well, yeah. Go ahead, Dale. I'm sorry.
They just want to know whether or not to call somebody to do last rites if something happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Who do I contact? You know, a lot of that has to do with labels. You know, we like to put labels on people. And we kind of put people into different compartments. And so if you're, it's really easy if I know what kind of Christian you are, you know. And so if you're a Baptist Christian, I can put you over here. If you're a Methodist Christian, I can put you over here. If you're, you know, and so forth. And we put people in boxes kind of a thing. So it's almost like when you tell somebody, well, I'm just a Christian. It's like, well, what box do I put you in? Okay. They don't have a box that's just Christian, you see. They don't know what to do with it. You know, again, just so much variety. And again, you know, just the idea here of this discussion is that in a lot of ways, I say people today are not a lot different than the people were back then when it comes to religion. There are some differences in a kind of, you know, where globally I think, you know, people are in terms of worshiping God and believing in a God. But we're really not a whole lot different. So this idea of a God who as he says here, is wanting men to seek him out, okay, and to reach out for him, as he says here, and find him. That's something that we need to try to encourage people and teach people about God, because even today, a lot of people in Christianity, their concept of religion and faith is, I go to church on Sunday, we worship God, we do our thing, and then we go on about our business through the rest of the week. Okay? And you know, there's a lot of folks, and there's a huge movement that's going on, and it's coming more and more to the forefront in the present political situation with the nomination of the Supreme Court Justice. You know, over her faith. And so there are people that are basically, and she's already been, you know, one politician said, you know, I don't remember the wording of it, but basically, you know, you're too religious kind of thing. And so what people want today a lot of people is they want a separation, okay, between your religious life and your secular life.
Right.
And the two should not be mixed. You go to church, you do your religion at church, and that's fine with us. Just don't take it outside the church building. Okay? And that's where we are today, especially here in America. People are okay with religion as long as you don't practice it outside the church building. But when you start talking about it at work and you start practicing it and doing it, then you're going to run into some problems and opposition. Okay? But God is not one, and here's a message we need to have from this. God is not one to be kept in a building. Okay? And for us to just come on Sundays and worship Him and then go on about our secular lives. As far as the Bible is concerned and what it teaches for Christians and how we are to live, there is no difference between a, there is no such thing as a secular life and a religious life. Okay? In New Testament Christianity, that separation does not exist. Okay? Christ expects us to live our faith every day, no matter where we are. Okay? So that whole idea of secular versus religious in our lives is not something that as Christians we can truly do and be faithful to God at the same time. All right? Because God wants us to seek Him, to reach out to Him. He wants a relationship with us. And that's not just a simply Sunday morning relationship that He wants. Okay? So we look at this speech here that he has, what's the effect of what he tells them, this message that he gives them? What's the effect on these philosophers?
So some of them sneered.
Okay.
Some of them had their curiosity piqued. It appears most of them were for the most part, indifferent.
Okay.
It's like, okay, we heard a new thing. Now then let's go check and see if there's another new thing we heard.
Okay. All right. There are some believers. There are some scoffers. And again, in that particular time with this group of people, it's a new idea, so we'll have to chew on it a while. I'm sure that they probably went on, you know, for quite some time in their own little groups and so forth, talking about this new religion that we've been told about. Again, some of them continuing to scoff, others, you know, becoming perhaps believers of this and so forth. So, verse 34, a few men became followers of Paul and believed. And then it lists a couple of those folks here. There's also that group of them who said, yeah, well, we want to hear some more of this. Again, their curiosity is piqued, as Dale said, and they, you know, okay, I want to continue to hear some more of what you've got to say about this new God that you've introduced to us. Okay? What we don't know is, from that point, how many more people became believers and so forth. But we do know that Paul's message there was effective, at least to some. So he goes into this area where religion is an important topic, but it's more of a something to be philosophized about, rather than believed and lived out in our lives, and he actually changed some people's lives. And there's an important lesson there for you and I today that, as we're saying, there's a lot of people that kind of live their religion that way today, and I think what we need to try to do is to help people change from this, you know, philosophy and ideas about religion to where they're actually trying and striving each day to live out their faith in Christ Jesus in very real ways. Okay, so that's a challenge that we can and need to issue to people. As we talk about the Bible, as we talk about God, and we talk about church things and so forth, how can we apply it in ways that help them to understand that God really does want you to reach out to him and to seek him, and you can find him and have a relationship with him rather than just having this kind of broad, general, you know, I believe in God kind of philosophy. All right? Any other thoughts there at all? Right.
Because even before they even heard about it, at least they left the door open to find out about, you know, had an open mind.
Yeah.
But it may be some things we don't know.
Okay. Yeah.
So
yeah.
That was one good thing, which that door was open. In today's society, a lot of times that door is not open.
Okay. A lot of times the door gets slammed shut, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But a lot of times it gets left open. You know, I've had studies with people and discussions and conversations with folks that, you know, you're not going to convince them the first time you meet with them. But, you know, can we get together again and talk about this? Sure, yeah, let's do that. And you know, I always try to do that, you know, say, you know, when can we get together again and study some more, or, you know, what have you? You know, and so, yeah, they're not convinced yet, but the door, at least you got your foot in there, and, you know, you may have opportunity to come back. If you ask for it, you know, to come back and talk some more and study some more and, you know, and so forth. The other side of that, though, is that you are going to run into scoffers. And I've studied with people. I remember one fellow that when I was going to college, and Cindy and I were out at Ohio Valley College, and I had this fellow that I was studying with one of the guys that was a student there with me in the Bible department. His brother-in-law, or future brother-in-law, I don't remember which, was Catholic. And so, you know, he came to me and said, would you help me study with this guy, you know, knowing that I had been Catholic and all. So yeah, we'll do it. So we met with this fellow, and we studied with him for weeks, I mean, several weeks. And, you know, and he showed some interest, you know, there was that, yeah, okay, I see what you're saying, but, you know, but he kept allowing us to come back, and we studied for several weeks. And at the end of it, he just said, yeah, I see what you're saying, but I'm not really interested in changing anything. You know, it wasn't those words, but basically that's what it all came down to. You know, he just basically, you know, got to a point. He was curious, and he got his curiosity satisfied, and then said, "Nah, I don't need to do this anymore." So you're going to have those kind of folks. You're going to have those situations happen. You got to shake the dust off and move on. Don't allow that to discourage you. Okay. Realize that some people are going to close the door on you, and so you go to the next door. All right? Anything else before we finish up this morning?
Yeah, studying with a guy one time who was Catholic, and at the end of our study, he had decided he wasn't Catholic anymore. That was about as far as I was able to move him, so it's like, okay, I guess it's going to be somebody else's turn.
Yeah, and you never know. You never know where that's going to go, so. Okay, next week we will begin looking at Paul's visit to Corinth and all the stuff that has to do with the church in Corinth. This is a big, big event in the history of the church. All right, so that's where we'll go. Thank you all very much.